question, why was he the sole survivor? Sole survivor, cursed with second sight.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Stone Cold Shots, the wrestling podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot. Every episode, we review and recap a wrestling pay-per-view from any promotion, from any time period. Before we get into this week's, why don't you guys introduce yourselves to our fans out there, our viewers in the Stone Cold Shots universe. Why don't you tell them your name, and if there was one wrestling match that you had to watch four times in a row, what would that match be?
From this era?
Oh, from any era.
Okay, well, I am the internet darling, Josh Felix Pryor. And if there's one match that I had to watch for the rest of my life...
No, just four times in a row.
The rest of my life, it would probably be... probably the Braun Strowman-Roman Reigns ambulance match. I'm telling you, I'm from Great Balls of Fire. Just watch that over and over again.
You know, you didn't even give that match five bald heads.
Because no match has five bald heads yet. Could tonight be the night? Because it's going to be a happening.
Jeez. My name is Lauren. I'm a regular darling. One match I would be willing to watch four times in a row.
For the rest of your life.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of the most exciting matches to me, and I'm stuck between, like, anything Prince Puma or, like, Phoenix from Lucha Underground, mm-hmm. like, season one or two, or,
Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano.
I'm literally like, thinking, I'm thinking about something NXT, yeah. and, like, that's one of my favorite feuds mm-hmm. of all of NXT-dom since I've been watching.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, it's maybe one of theirs. Don't know which one, though. Could be, like, the DIY coming together and, like, triumphing over the Revival.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I don't know, could be their feud going in full force, maybe the first or second time they faced off. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm Campbell, and you guys picked great matches.
Uh-oh.
You picked great matches, but you picked very long matches. You know, DIY versus the Revival is a 2 out of 3 falls match. You want to watch 12 falls? You know? I went with the obvious choice of Toru Yano versus Colt Cabana from this year's Super J Cup.
Wait, can I have a new pick?
Yeah.
Pick Josebius versus James Storm.
But,
fast.
You know, Yano versus Cabana, like 5 minutes long, hilarious start to finish.
That was a great match.
I would watch that four times in a row.
Yeah,
that's my match of the year so far.
So let's get back on track here. We're watching Survivor Series.
Survivor Series 1987, where they had four Survivor Series matches in a row.
For 3 hours.
For 3 hours. Yeah, we, you know, it's November, or it will be November when this is released.
Yeah.
Going to be Survivor Series season, American Thanksgiving for all you Yanks.
Yeah.
And we thought we'd go back and watch the very first ever Survivor Series. We haven't done anything from 80s WWF so far,
mm-hmm.
So we thought we'd go back to the Hogan era and check something out.
Yeah, this was the Survivor Series after this was my first Survivor Series.
Ooh.
This was just before my time by a hair.
Whoa. Okay.
I started watching wrestling in 88. So I would have been 6 years old, just to date myself. But
just a sweet little boy.
Little Josh in his little underwear running around, body slamming pillows, rented Survivor Series 88 from Video Flix.
Uh-huh.
That's great.
That's a great picture you painted.
In 87, were you aware of wrestling? Like, did you know who Hulk Hogan was?
I don't think so. I think... Because, and the reason why I
As
say
a
this.
5 year old?
Well, the reason
Maybe
why I say
saw
this.
Maybe Rocky III.
Because I don't recall anything. The first thing I remember from wrestling is the WrestleMania video game.
Mm.
And and I don't remember Hulk Hogan's old school title. And I want to say, like, I definitely, like, vividly remember the cover for 88 with, like, you know, like, Hulk Hogan's team and, like, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, and Texas Tornado. I think that's the right one, but I'm in the ballpark. But okay. I'm very sure it was 88 was all the right. first one I was watching.
Wow.
Cool. Yeah. Well, let's get into 87 here.
Fuck yeah.
A little, have you watched this before?
I don't think so.
No? Okay. First time for everybody, eh?
Yeah.
We're all going into this together. So we got, right off the bat, such a, like, classic wrestling feel of, like, the aerial shot of the ring in the arena. We're introduced to our commentary team. We have Jesse the Body Ventura and Gorilla Monsoon.
Jesse's got that pilgrim hat on.
Ugh. And? That he can't fit over top of his headphones. Okay, the thing to note, though, about him, what's his name?
Jesse the Body Ventura.
Yeah.
The body.
Now he's the mind.
What? Okay.
Isn't he like a wannabe politician now?
He was the governor of Minnesota.
There you go.
That's a big one.
He's the governor of Minnesota.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Okay.
He also believes a lot of conspiracy theories.
Yeah. He has a podcast that Henry Rollins was on, and I can't think of anything that I listen to less.
So here's the thing about Jesse Ventura back in the day. Him and especially with Gorilla Monsoon, one of the best color commentary teams ever. I would say, like, it's a toss-up between Jesse was the originator. He invented the color commentator kind of position. But Bobby the Brain Heenan, for my money, is still the best. Back in the day, I know you guys heard some shitty WCW stuff. And also Jesse's snakeskin jacket.
Yeah. So your first shot of him is straight up, like, and it looks like he's wearing a sports jacket. But they have a nice behind shot of them sitting at the table. And he is wearing a sports jacket with a boa, or like with a large snake's skin on his jacket. But it's a snake is not wide enough to do a jacket. And so it's just a panel of snake skin that then divides and, like, does a V. So it's like a Y shape over his back.
Upon further inspection, this appears to be snake skin.
Yeah, and then it, like, pans down a little more and he's wearing full snake skin pants.
Beautiful.
And it's just like...
If I could bring one thing back from the 80s, it would be snake skin jackets.
It's a look, man. It's a look.
I like his big star earring is also really fucking cool. Jesse Ventura just, like, looks dope as shit.
Fuck yeah, he does.
Oh, that's super not what I was going for with that whole breakdown of his outfit.
Oh, it's such a cool look. You didn't like it?
It was awful. That jacket was awful.
I'd wear it.
Yeah, next time I come here, I'm coming in
snake
skin.
It was just a panel of snake skin.
What'd you think of Gorilla Monsoon's suit?
Nothing.
Yeah, I didn't notice it either. We get into a montage. We get a little title card, like...
We get Groovin' Tunes.
This, like, really fucking 80s, like, slapping bass line.
This was a sick opening package.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nice.
Of, like, mostly of Hulk Hogan body slamming people.
Fuck yeah.
And we go into a little promo from Team Honky Tonk Man.
These, like, all of these, so the entire show just had these backstage interviews before the match, and all of the backstage interviews had everybody involved in the match just running wild in the backstage area, and, like, you know, Mean Gene's trying to get, who was doing the...
Honky Tonk Man.
I can't remember who was doing the Honky Tonk promo. It might have been Mean Gene.
Maybe Mean Gene. Yeah. Whoever was doing the promo was trying to get control of the situation. Everybody's going nuts. Like, there's Hercules. Like, Harley Race is trying to be calmed down. You know,
it's like Honky Tonk's trying to say, like, Macho Man, like, you know, you're never going to be as good as me. I'm the Intercontinental Champion. But while he's saying that, everyone else in the background is just going, like,
Yeah. Yeah, it's really weird that they only have one person speaking and the rest of them are just making rabble, like just being noisy in the background. Yeah.
That was the theme for all the backstage interviews this entire show.
Yeah,
just and rabble.
It doesn't just help rabble. That it's like, it's not rabble, only rabble. Is it a team of five dudes, but there's also like between one and three managers at any given time who are also yelling.
Also, yeah. Bobby the Brain Heenan, I'm pretty sure, managed every team, if not between Bobby Heenan and Jimmy Hart.
Yeah.
They definitely managed every team throughout the night.
Yes.
Yeah. Or every bad guy team, I should say.
The Honky Tonk promo I thought was actually pretty decent. It was kind of fucked up that he, like, sort of threatened to hit Elizabeth with a guitar.
Yeah.
Hey, she gets in the ring, baby.
I'm gonna give her what's coming to her.
Yeah. It's so
weird.
Yeah. What impressions on this team?
I didn't know, like, hardly any of them. Like, I know Honky Tonk Man.
There's Hercules Hernandez.
Okay, so for Hercules, I do have thoughts. I thought he looked amazing. And
you think he looked Herculean?
No, that's not what I picture Hercules. Like, he had short, curly black hair, which is not what I think of as Hercules. But
was the look at the time.
He looked good. And he had, like, a big chain around his
neck. He did have a big chain. I thought that was pretty fucking cool. Yeah,
King Harley Race.
Yeah, that was nice.
It was the first king.
Yep.
Also came out to Jerry Lawler's theme. I don't know if anybody picked that up.
No.
Yeah, so they have one king theme.
That's so funny.
Until Baron Corbin came around.
Yeah.
Danny Davis.
Okay. I didn't know who that was. Yeah.
This was a real team of nobodies. They come out to the ring. We've already talked. We got Honky Tonk Man, King Harley Race, Bobby the Brain Heenan, Jimmy Hart, Hercules, Ron Bass, and Danny Davis. And they are up against the team of Macho Man Randy Savage, Ricky
Brutus the Barber, Beefcake, Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Who?
Who else? We got Steamboat in there.
Elizabeth.
Jake the Snake Roberts. So it's like,
this from a who's who of 80s.
That's kind of the thing. It's like from jump, it's like you got this team where I know like two dudes, one of which is like Harley Race is like kind of looking like he's towards the end of his time.
Yeah, he slowed down a little bit at this point.
And then you have a team of just like, oh, holy shit, I know all of those dudes, and this is like their prime. They're all looking amazing.
How good did Macho Man look this match?
Oh, he looked cool, man.
Oh, man, he looked like his physique was on point, his tan was on point, his in-ring work. Woo!
Mm-hmm.
This is like peak Macho Man. This was around the time that Macho Man and Ricky Steamboat had their WrestleMania 3 match, I think.
Yep.
The year prior.
It would have been the year prior, because they're talking about the Hogan Andre thing for the whole show. But yeah, I was going to say Steamboat really stood out to me.
Sure.
Yeah.
He felt like, we've talked a lot about certain guys in the 90s being like a decade ahead of their time.
Definitely.
And this Steamboat here felt a decade ahead of his time, you know, like really sort of laying the groundwork for your Jerry Lynn's and your Lance T. Storms.
You could see the influence.
Yeah, like how great he was technically. Was there anyone that stood out for you in this?
Ricky the Steamboat always stands out for me, and also he was like really over with the crowd, which was fun.
Yeah.
Or anyone hear something funny? My mom always called him Ricky the Steamboat. It's Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
His last name is Steamboat. He's the dragon. I liked that everybody had everybody has a the something. It's like Jake the Snake, Brutus the Barber, Ricky the Dragon, like
the Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah, everybody was a the something, which was really funny to me.
Yeah. Speaking of, though, Brutus the Barber Beefcake is wearing the most horrible outfit to the entrance ring. He's wearing like bright green tiger print. But the most notable thing about his outfit is that he's wearing, like, sexy Natalia mesh cutouts in his leggings.
Well, the Brutus the Beefcake, his iconic look was that it was almost like scissors had cut away his tights.
I got that. Because he also
I didn't get that.
Oh, I totally... Like, his outfit when he walks in, like, his shirt is all cut up, like, willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. The pants were very strategically had mesh bits sewn in, but mm-hmm. the shirt was, like, willy-nilly cut up.
Yeah.
He had, like, gardening shears when he
yeah,
came in.
Yeah, that was his thing. He's a barber.
He used to, like, try to give people haircuts with it.
I know, but I'm just saying that really drives home the fact that his shirt and body was all cut up. But anyway.
and he was cut.
Yeah, so.
Well, he was cut up.
But he's wearing these, like, mesh leggings, like they're leggings, and there's huge mesh panels that go from like his calf or his knees all the way up to his waist mm-hmm. on the side. And I was having this huge debate with Campbell as to whether he was wearing any underwear, because I don't see how he could have been.
Thong, baby.
It's Man-thong. Not a thong. That's Man-thong. What Campbell said.
It's not a thong. It's not a tumor.
It couldn't have been a thong because it goes all the way up to the elastic on his waist, and there's no, like, you don't, you see the elastic on his waist, and there ain't no thong fabric there. So I don't know if he had, like, a cup sewn into his leggings
or
what.
I'm going to pay Brutus the Barber Beefcake $25 for a cameo, and I'm going to ask them that question in the shadow.
Like, there was nowhere for a thong to go there. Like, you would have seen it. Anyway.
No. My last thing about the entrance is that Honky Tonk Man dances like Pee Wee Herman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's, like, very stiff kind of jig that he does.
What you're doing right now looks like Christopher Daniels making fun of little,
Marco Stone.
Yeah.
yeah, put me in a feud with Honky Tonk Man. It'll be just as good as Daniels' stunt. So I don't know, how do we want to go through these? You want to? Are we going?
I don't know. This. I'll say this. All of these matches were a mess as far as eliminations go. So I think maybe what we should do is we should note the most notable thing from the match or notable eliminations,
mm-hmm.
and then kind of run through it like that, and then we'll give the winner
sure
with who eliminated who.
I think
that would be better than just running down eliminations, right? Sure.
I thought that Brutus Beefcake's elimination was notable for me because it was very story oriented. Like, he got too prideful. He didn't tag out when he should have, and then he got fucked over and got pinned. He got pinned. And, like, I liked how he was pinned too, because he was pinned and he waited until after the three count to try to kick out. Which I love, because it means that he was trying to kick out and he just couldn't quite make it in time.
Do you know what the old thing about that is?
No.
It's so people would kick out at three to look strong, brother.
Yeah.
That was
it. I liked
it. Right?
He super did it like a half second or two after,
like,
three.
After the fact that he was like almost out, but he couldn't quite make
yeah,
it.
Like yeah. I like it when they try, like, when they really make it seem like they are trying to kick out, and it's not like, oh, we have all these near falls and we're not going to sell the fact that, like we're just not going to address the fact that we have all of these falls, near falls, and no one kicks out, or like we have a pin and they don't even try to kick out, they just fucking lie there, and you're like, cool, it's going to be a pin because he's just like dead.
I got a question for everybody though. How did everybody feel about no finishing moves, really, besides like Honky Tonk Man, Shake, Rattle, and Roll? Like, people were getting finished on, like, double clotheslines and, like, you know, high knees and stuff like that.
That's true.
So, on that note, yeah. I think the thing is that, like, because I haven't really watched a whole lot of, like, 80s wrestling,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's one of those things where it's, like, any time that you watch a wrestler that you're not familiar with, you don't know what their finisher is.
Yeah. Totally. I don't know any of their finishers.
The only, like,
besides, like, Macho Man's flying knee, Jake's DDT.
Yeah, Macho Man's flying elbow. You
oh, yeah, yeah,
rube.
Okay, whoa. Okay, I misspoke. I just said flying knee. But flying elbow,
yeah.
Shake, rattle, and roll, DDT. I think that was it for finishers in the match.
And so here's the thing. Like, the biggest takeaway that I had from this was, like, Jake the Snake's DDT is, like, looks like such a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, because the DDT is the only move that he goes for. They call that he's going for it, and the person, like, I think it was Davis, like, sort of, like, weasels out of it, and then next go around he gets hit with the DDT. So it makes the DDT look dangerous in a way that, like, Savage doesn't go for the elbow until he's going to hit the elbow.
Yeah.
You know? So it's nice to see, like, that, like, a little bit of performance from Jake the Snake. But it's also a thing where, like, the DDT now is just, like, a transitional move. Like, everybody and their fucking grandma does the DDT. Yeah. So it was kind of in the same way where it's like, I didn't notice a lack of finishing moves because I was just kind of like, oh, maybe that's his finishing move. Like, fucking, you know, like, maybe that guy finished people on, like, a fucking weird suplex. And everybody just does that now, right? Like, it's...
I think it adds to, like, the drama and excitement, though. Like, if there's, like, a kick out, and there's, like, kind of, like, a high spot, but not really,
mm-hmm.
and they get the pin on it. Like, I don't know. Like, there's something about that, like... any move can, like, take this person out.
Yeah.
But now it's not like, you know, it's like, oh, like, finisher, and, like, Ambrose has to hit a super dirty deeds to, you know, put this guy away. I don't know. Like, for me, like, this was, like, kind of like a simpler time, if you will.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. I can understand that.
I get that for sure. I just want to go back to Jake the Snake real quick, because this is the first... I've seen him... Like, I've seen the Stone Cold King of the Ring match with Jake the Snake.
Yeah, which is not a great...
Not a great Jake the Snake match. Yeah. And this is the first time that I've seen, like, Jake in his element, like, sure. fucking giving her. And, like, he really stole this match for me.
Oh, absolutely.
Just, like, the way that he moves and the way that he is able to, like, convey his character through his physicality.
The way he throws punches.
The way he throws punches. Like, so much... Short
arm clothesline. Like,
that short arm clothesline was so good.
So good. Like, Jake the Snake was such a good, like, in-ring psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, you know, the way he sold, the way he gave it back. Like, his, like, it just, like... His give and take and his ebb and flow in the match is so... It was so perfect. And his promo was great.
Yeah.
That guy could have been world champ for my dollar.
I think it's the thing where it's like... It really speaks to, like, how much just, like, going against what everybody else is doing will work for you in the long run. Because, like, Jake the Snake is so cold and calculated in his promo and in his ring style. And even just, like, in his look... that he stands out from the rest of the crowd that is so bombastic and so over the top, in the same way where it's like you flip it on its head now and you look at someone like a Velveteen Dream, who is like so over the top and so, and like would totally get lost in the shuffle in like a mid-80s group of guys. He would just be like whatever, but in the era where everybody now is so like realistic MMA influenced, and it's like it's cool to see Jake the Snake really kind of rise to the top of this match for me.
Yeah, great point. You used the word bombastic, which was great.
Lauren, was there anyone else from this that like really stood out to you, or we want to get to the finish here?
No, yeah, I just said Jake the Snake is like super over with the crowd, as is Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
There you go.
Got the dragon up in there.
Yeah.
You know, elimination, we get down to a 3-on-1 of, we got Macho Man, Steamboat, and Jake the Snake against the Honky Tonk Man.
And I think Honky played the perfect shit heel in this match.
Oh, yeah.
I think he did a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, like you said, like, we got down to 3-on-1, Ricky sets him up, and then, like, you know, Macho jumps him. And then the big, was it Atomic Drop?
Yep. There's so many Atomic Drops.
Yeah, so Macho hits Honky with the Atomic Drop. Honky goes through the ropes. And then just, like, in one fell swoop, just starts walking to the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just fucking leaves. So good. A real, like a Kevin Owens kind of move, you know?
Totally.
And Jesse was like, oh, he's got nothing on the line. He doesn't have to defend the belt, you know? There's nothing on the line for him, so he's just out of there. Which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, totally, like, makes sense. Yeah. Really, really kind of maybe speaks to why this is a dumb stipulation. So yeah, Steamboat, Macho Man, Elizabeth, Jake the Snake, and a large python celebrate in the ring together.
Yeah, he whips the python and Jake out. Snake.
It's like fucking camera is like, it like it's like in ring, cuts to Honky Tonk leaving, cuts back, and there's just a fucking giant snake that has appeared in the last 30 seconds.
So funny.
We go to another one of these backstage interview rabbles.
Sorry, I got something.
Campbell.
Oh, Jesus.
Why you gotta do me like this? This is not, I thought this was the gold standard.
I'm gonna cut it this time. I'm gonna make it seem like I know what I'm doing.
No, don't cut it.
No, you leave all this in. I'm gonna cut it. Hey,
leave all this in.
If you want things left in, you learn how to edit, all right? For now, At the end of every match here, we like to ask Josh for his rating system. It is the gold standard of wrestling podcast rating systems. We rate things on a scale of 1 to 5 bald heads. Josh, how many did this get?
Oh, sorry, Campbell. You caught me off guard with that. It's 3 1/3. 3 1/3 bald heads.
Yeah. No.
I think that's a fair score. That was a fun, entertaining match.
It was a very fun, entertaining match. A lot of fun stuff going on there. Actually had some character and some story. It was a little bit of a mess, but like,
yeah, that's the time. This is the first ever Survivor Series match. Mm-hmm. They're trying to figure out what is a Survivor Series match, and I think they do a better job than Survivor Series matches now, where they try to get too cute with it. You know, I think for the first ever Survivor Series match, you know, you got a little, you know, pyro and ballyhoo, as they call it.
Well, okay, so hang on, this is interesting. What do you mean by like getting too cute with it now?
Well, they try to outsmart themselves with, like, how to do these finishes and how to, like, you know, like, get people out and yada, yada, yada.
Okay.
It was, like, a simpler time then where they were just, like, you know, like, countouts. Like, and or, like Honky Tonk Man, like, just leaving.
Like, yeah, or even, out at the end like, of the match. Like, Race and Duggan get, like, double counted out.
Double
right?
counted out. It's, like, the first eliminations, right? Yeah. It's, like, it puts the thought in the head. It's, like, oh, man, anything could happen in these things.
Well, what about, like, Braun Strowman getting counted out via James Ellsworth?
Well, that's pretty cute.
Yeah. Too cute, would you say?
Sometimes they get too cute. Yeah. They get too cute for their own good.
How do you feel about, like, Survivor Series now?
It's just never my favorite thing to have that many people in a ring together. I'm more into Elimination Chamber because it generally, like, it has the high stakes, fast pace of, like, high turnover of people, but it allows for more one-on-one time or, like, two-on-one time or something, like, I don't know. Which is way easier to play with character. Like, I think it's really hard to forward any stories or any character with a Survivor Series match.
I agree. Like, the thing I've never liked about Survivor Series, like, back in the day, like, it was like bragging rights, and bragging rights were a real thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but now it's like there's no stakes. I don't care. This is kind of like a throwaway pay-per-view.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, nothing's really going to happen.
It is a throwaway. I don't know why it's one of the biggest ones.
Because it used to be one of the biggest ones.
That's, well, because it used to be one of the only ones.
True.
Right? Like, this
before,
is,
right?
This is before. The thing about Survivor Series is that it dates from before when they had a pay-per-view every month. Like, it used to be, like, I think in 1987, right. The only pay-per-views that they had were WrestleMania and Survivor Series.
Well, and they had the Royal Rumble, but I think the Royal Rumble was just, like, a televised thing that they did out of Hamilton.
Yeah.
You know?
Well.
So, like, I think my thing is that, like, it kind of plays into, like, story that, like, this is just, like, raw booking, where it's like, oh, we have, like, these three faces and these three heels, so we're going to have a six-man tag match.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Survivor Series feels like, with a little bit more dressing up. I like Survivor Series when there's a story to it, like when you had, like, Team The Authority versus Team, like, John Cena.
Yeah, it's right? Like, whoever, if John Cena wins, The Authority's out.
Yeah, then the Authority has to disband or whatever, right? Yeah. Or, like, when there is already a group of, like, five people, you know? And maybe, like, ideally you have two groups of five people. Like, if there was, like, some sort of Survivor Series of, like, Imperium versus Undisputed Era. I know that's, like, a four-on-four, but it's, like, if they each pulled in one sort of, like, ringer, you know, and to do a Survivor Series match, that would be great, because it's, like, that faction warfare.
Yeah.
But when it's just, like, oh, Team Raw versus Team SmackDown, or, like, Team this guy, or Team... What do we have fucking coming up this week? Team Hogan versus Team Flair?
Man, nobody gives a fuck about that.
Yeah. It's in Saudi Arabia. Who gives a shit? Not to date when we're recording this, but, like, you know?
Oh, man, that was terrible pay-per-view last month.
I can't wait for the Survivor Series match of team insert names here.
Yeah, can you believe Tyson Fury did to Braun Strowman?
Yeah.
Cut in what happened.
All right. So, yeah, like, I feel like we're all fairly on the same page about Survivor Series as a whole here forward. So we get to this Team Andre the Giant promo. Bobby the Brain Heenan is doing, like, most of the heavy lifting here because Andre the Giant is French.
I love Andre the Giant. I don't know. Like, I forget how much I love him, and then I see him in a promo, and he's like, ah. he just has this way about him where he's like, I will be a survivor.
I will eat your soul. That's what he says, right? I will eat your soul, Hogan.
You know, like, Vince just gave him one talking point. And he's like, just say this, you're fine.
I think the thing about Andre the Giant is that, like, because, like, my first exposure to him was through The Princess Bride.
Hell yeah.
So it's like watching him here where he's trying to be, like, this terrifying monster heel. It's like, you're charming. You don't scare me. You're charming.
Even when he's trying to be, like, the most convincing time he was a bad guy is like when he ripped Hogan's cross off of his chest and then Hogan's chest was bleeding. Other than that, like, he's that guy's the sweetest.
Yeah, like, forget it. He just looks like such a huge sweetheart.
Yeah.
All right, so we have the ladies Survivor Series match. I'm surprised. I'm so conditioned to WWE now. I was expecting, like, and here we're presenting you with the first ever women's Survivor Series match.
No, it's like, now we got the girls wrestling. Which literally was it.
So, Lauren, do you want to introduce the teams here?
I was pretty confused about, like, who was on whose team.
Yeah.
But, okay, so I have the Glamour Girls, Velvet McIntyre. Was she on a different team?
Yeah, Velvet McIntyre was on Moolah's team.
So we got the Glamour Girls, Dawn Marie, Donna Cristianello,
yep,
Sensational Sherry,
versus
Velvet McIntyre, Rockin' Robin, the Jumping Bomb Angels, and the Fabulous Moolah.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep. And Jimmy the Hart is managing the Glamour Girls. So
Jimmy the Hart. Yeah, you did it. You did it.
I did it. That was a total slip up because I'm just so used to saying the Mouth of the South. Yeah, Jimmy the Mouth of the South Hart.
Oh my God.
Hey,
millennials.
I thought this was pretty good. There was some, like, really fun stuff in here, eh?
You know who was awesome? Was Velvet McIntyre.
She was so awesome. She seemed the most technical.
Yeah,
like
she seemed like she had, like, some great upside. She did, like, a Hurricanrana at one point in the match.
Yeah, and she was so fast. That was the thing that I really liked, was she really seemed like a hurricane up in there, like, just like a tornado busting around
like
the
a
rain.
Storm.
Yeah. Oh, no. She's going to marry in.
This is going to come out 2 weeks after we've, like, made all of the jokes about the storms.
True.
This little peek behind the curtain for those of you at home in the Stone Cold Shots universe. We're real drunk right now because we've already recorded an episode tonight about NWA Power.
Burr.
So bear with us. So,
yeah, Velvet
I'm
McIntyre.
Not on my game. Yeah, it just seemed like they gave her a lot of time to showcase herself. And her
she
mood.
Did, like, honestly, for me, she was her and the Jumping Bomb Angels.
My God. Yeah, I was going to say, like, the Jumping Bomb Angels were
way ahead of their time.
So ahead of their time.
Yeah.
Like, they were doing some, like, really crazy, like, like, almost felt like a lucha style wrestling.
It was wild, and, like, their execution was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was, like, honestly, like, usually with 80s women wrestling, and this is nothing against the performers back in the day, but, you know, watching Glow and watching, like, you know, some of the, you know, the women's matches back in the day, they weren't attempting stuff like this. It was a very, like, you know, paint by numbers match.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jumping Bomb Angels were just, they were doing stuff that was, like, again, way ahead of their time, and they were nailing it.
Yeah.
And Velvet McIntyre. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you could take all three of those people out of that time, put them now,
yeah,
and they would be completely fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one thing that, like, was a little bit of a piss off was that neither Gorilla or Jesse the Body Ventura knew the name of either of the Jumping Bomb Angels.
Yeah.
And just kept referring to them as Jumping Bomb Angel singular.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that, like, they were wearing different colored tights. Like, it's not even like it was
probably
like,
for the benefit of the announcers who were wearing different stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, it's like they knew exactly which glamour girl was which, but they who were dressed identically but couldn't tell the difference. And there was kind of a thing where it's like you talk about like plopping that into now, and it's like I don't think it would be any better because you watch any AEW women's match featuring like Riho or Yuka Sakazaki, Jim Ross doesn't know who the fuck is in the ring.
And did you notice with the glamour girls? They weren't really selling too much for the Jumpin' Bomb Angels. Did you guys notice this?
Well, because so it's like the Glamour Girls were the tag champs, and it kind of felt like so like
they're saying not, a little too strong.
Yeah, like not to jump ahead too far, but it basically like the eliminations end up so that we end up with basically just a tag match. We have the Glamour Girls versus the Jumpin' Bomb Angels as the final four.
Yeah,
and it kind of felt like they were doing a setup for the Jumpin' Bomb Angels to become like contenders to the WWF women's tag belts.
Which they eventually win.
Yep. And the Glamour Girls did not seem too happy about that. I gotta say, like, I don't... How did you feel about, like, the pacing of this match, about, like, the eliminations?
I don't know. I liked it. I didn't notice. I didn't have anything to say about it. Like, I...
Because you know, for me, so, like, Moolah and Sherry both go out early. And
I
they're,
forgot.
Like... fucking team captains, right?
I did forget that the captains went out first, and I was really confused by that, but then I was like pleasantly surprised by the wrestling that ensued afterwards. So it wasn't like they were hurting for the lack of captains.
It just felt to me from like a pacing or like a booking perspective, you know, like once both captains are out, it's kind of like, all right, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
You know,
Gorilla said at one point, if there's one nasty girl in the world, it's Moolah. And boy, was he right about that.
Yeah, that really didn't hold up too well.
But, like, you know what? I had never seen Sherry in a wrestling capacity, really, besides her matches with, like, Luna Vachon later on.
Yeah, but she like, valeted Macho Man when he turned heel,
right? She was,
like,
one of the best valets of all time, like, for my money. She, like, valeted Macho Man, Shawn Michaels, Harlem Heat, like, her resume is amazing. With
totally.
That.
I thought she held her own here. I would probably put her like fourth after McIntyre and the Jumping Bomb Angels.
Yeah,
like I was actually pretty impressed by some of her stuff. And especially as one of the, like, talked about last match, how it was like, there was one team where I didn't know anybody on that team. And this was one where I was like, yeah, I know two people in this entire match of like 10 women. Like, two of these women have legacies that have carried on, and one of them is just as a valet, right?
Exactly.
What did you give this?
I gave it 2 3/4.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as I love like the kind of throwback wrestling, the rest holds are a little much sometimes.
And
this match lasted way longer than it needed to.
Mm-hmm.
There were some great high spots by a lot of, like, you know, like, honestly, like, really talented women. But again, I think the match just dragged on a little bit too long.
Yeah.
Ah.
So we jump over. We're back to Bobby the Brain Heenan cutting a promo for the bad guy tag teams.
Yep.
Right.
All I have down here is Bobby's managing everyone.
Yeah.
That's pretty much...
And he kind of, as much as Bobby the Brain Heenan's great, he kind of just like cuts the same promo for every team that he's managing.
Exactly. Like, he's just like a new quip.
We're going to get you. These guys are the best.
They do a microphone like around the world. I'm going to be the survivor. Like, that's like, all right.
Was this the team of Sequins? The Sequins team?
No, the Sequins were the good guys.
Okay.
This is the team of... So we...
Holy fuck.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry, I say Bret Hart and Jim Manville and Russians and Islanders versus Team Sequins.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. So in case you didn't catch that at home, we've got the Hart Foundation, Demolition, the Islanders, Dream Team, and Nikolai Volkov and another guy?
Yeah, Boris Zukov. And Demolition. Did you say Demolition?
I said Demolition.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm on my shit here.
Demolition had the best theme songs of the 80s. Here comes the Yaks. Here comes the Smasher.
Were they the ones who were dressed?
Like what? Gimps.
Like Gimps.
Yeah, they're the Gimps.
Okay, yeah.
Well, they were basically like just like, weren't like they just
really
kind of like budget
old
road
Gimps.
Warriors?
Really old. Well, yeah. They were that.
And they're up against the team.
They were my favorite tag team when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah?
Hands down, until the Legion of Doom came in.
Well, yeah.
Which were the World Warriors.
Legion of Doom are fucking cool.
They were dope. One time, Hawk, so I got like front row tickets to a wrestling show, and then like Hawk pushed me out of my chair and then grabbed my steel chair and hit Demolition with it.
That is amazing.
I have so many good stories from when I was a kid from going to wrestling matches, but that was one of the coolest. Coolest with Bret Hart getting his glasses.
Whoa, you got Bret Hart's glasses?
Sure did. And then I went to school the next day, and another kid was wearing Bret Hart glasses, and he said he got Bret Hart's glasses. And I'm like, no way, I got Bret Hart glasses. But what happened was Bret Hart was coming to the ring. I was losing my fucking mind. I was again front row. I had a hookup. And I was losing my mind. And he winked at my mom, and then he went to the ring, and he came back. And he's like, there you go, buddy. And he patted me on the head, and he put the glasses on me.
That's sick.
That sounds like the more legit story.
Yeah, I hope you fucking fought that other kid and put him in the sharpshooter.
I didn't. I was a real nerd.
I love all these stories about how hot your mom was.
She was honestly like, all the wrestlers like were trying to get with her.
That's so cool.
For those of you who haven't heard, I think our first episode, there's a nice little story about Hacksaw Jim Duggan there.
Yeah, and then
now I know who that is, and that changes everything.
He gave her the old thumbs up on a Superstars. Okay. Rude.
No, that's what he says!
Yeah, okay, Campbell. And then Roddy Piper and Vince McMahon were talking about, he's got good taste in women. It's my mom.
Oh, nice. My God. I can't. I know Pryor. I've heard this story, but it's, like, so scandalous every time.
It was wild. Yeah. And there's, like, so they gave us all merch in the front row, and, like, I was wearing, like, Big Boss Man. No, Jairus was wearing a Big Boss Man. I was wearing a Hulk Still Rules shirt. Tear away. Later on in my childhood, I tried to rip it in half, and I couldn't.
No, you ruined it.
I was like, I thought they had gimmick shirts.
No, they were just on a lot of steroids.
Sorry about the detour.
All right, but let me tell you about Team Sequence.
Yeah, there you go, Team Sequence.
Mainly, I just want to talk about, like, so Strikeforce are the ones, I think, who are wearing just blue sequins?
Nope, Strikeforce are in all white.
White with red.
Are they wearing sequins?
Nope.
Okay, never mind. I don't want to talk about them then.
The British Bulldogs.
There was another team that was wearing the blue.
The Rougeau Bros.
The Rougeaus were wearing blue sequins.
Yeah.
And the British Bulldog is wearing, like, a sequin Union Jack cape over a sequin Union Jack tank top. Both of which he removes before the match because you can't fight in sequins.
Absolutely. I think we've all discovered that the hard way.
Filling out the roster, we have the Young Stallions and the Killer Bees, who dress like Striper, right?
Yeah.
You remember Striper?
Yeah, I do.
Striper would have been concurrent with the Killer Bees wrestling career. Was that a thing? Did they ever do a collab? Like,
I don't think they did. And fuck Brian Blair.
I've never heard of the Bumblebees. They, like, really took me by surprise.
The Killer Bees.
Oh, the Killer Bees.
Please.
Yeah, sorry.
So, So in this match, I mean, like, I gotta say, like, Demolition, the Islanders just had Haku in it, which is fucking awesome. The Hart Foundation, British Bulldogs, the Rougeaus, Strikeforce. I think that's it for me. Like, all of those teams were, like, iconic teams for me growing up.
Yeah, this is, like, a real who's who's. And even, like, Nikolai Volkov and, like, his Russian dude are, like, you know, like, names that I would recognize.
Yeah, for sure.
As opposed to these fucking Young Stallions, who the hell, or the Dream Team. Well, Greg the Hammer Valentine was on the Dream Team.
And Dino Bravo.
Dino Bravo, who
was murdered in his house by the Mafia.
What?!
Was he on that show that we watched?
No.
Yes, yeah.
Like, wait, was he?
He's going to be...
He's going to be on season two, right?
Season two.
Yeah, of Dark Side of the Ring.
Oh.
As is, Ray Rougeau is also going to be season two of Dark Side of the Ring.
I'm so glad they're doing more of Dark Side of the Ring.
Yeah. What was that guy's name?
Dino Bravo.
Lauren, you described Dino Bravo as thick Ric Flair, or thick Flair for short.
Oh, that guy.
That's so good.
Yeah.
He's from Quebec.
Oh. So a lot of Quebecers in this match.
Quebec contingent.
A lot of people in general in this match. My biggest takeaway for this match, I was just like, God, I hope tag teams get eliminated at the same time. Oh, like, if they had to go through 10 dudes, I probably would have just stopped watching.
This was a real fucking mess.
This was the fucking worst.
Haku rules, though.
Yeah.
Was he the one that, like, the commentators couldn't figure out his name?
No, that was his partner.
It was like Toma.
So that was, they were like, is it Toma? Tome? Tama? Like, just a fucking, again, like,
and that's no, Tama Tonga's dad.
Yeah. Because King Haku is Tama Tonga's uncle. You know who else is dad?
I don't know
it
what
is
lies and what is real. You're both saying things.
It's also Tonga Loa's dad.
And the Rougeaus are Kevin Owens.
That's not...
No, but a story about that. I think Jacques Rougeau trained Kevin Owens.
It's pronounced Cousteau.
Okay. Well, fuck you. Trained Kevin Owens, and Kevin Owens hates him to this day.
What?
Because he, like he only let him wrestle under his promotion... And, like refused to let him, like, wrestle anywhere else. And, like, he was under, like, a 3-year strict contract where he had to, like, wrestle at, like, flea markets and shit like that.
Wow.
It's pretty crazy. But train Kevin Owens.
Yeah, and by contrast, I'm sure Kevin Owens loves Jacques Cousteau, being an animal enthusiast.
We're getting
way
we're getting way off track here.
I'm going to go back to sleep.
Okay, let's blast through this match.
This match was fucking awful. This is the thing where it's like there's no interesting booking here, where it's like, when, especially with like the 10 guys on the side of the ring, it's such a mess, there's nothing happening. You don't really get that thing where it's like, to me, it seems so obvious to book, like, a Survivor Series match of just, like, make the faces the underdogs. Sure. Just, like, have the heels cheat to eliminate more faces early, mm-hmm. and then have the team captain and, like, maybe one dark horse on the face team sort of fight back to even the odds. And they don't do that fucking at all.
Not at all.
Like...
The spot of the match for me was Dynamite Kid giving Haku a headbutt. Like, and he landed directly on Haku's head.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like it almost fucking killed him. And then Haku stood right up and got him the fuck out of there. You don't headbutt a Samoan.
Speaking of headbutts, there was one point on commentary where the Islanders both get their heads smashed together.
Yeah.
And Jesse the Body Ventura, best color commentator in the business, according to Josh, says... Now that'll probably hurt because he hit both of their heads together.
Yeah, that was funny.
Let's add some color to the match.
Lauren, did you have anybody stand out to you during this match?
Nope.
I feel like you and I spent most of watching this match just talking about how much we hate the Survivor Series gimmick.
Yeah, I didn't take any notes for this one. I don't know.
Yeah, it was just kind of a mess.
But like,
I stopped at sequence.
Honest to God, the ending of this match was the stupidest, most contrived thing in the entire world. So,
hey, tell that to Nikki Bella.
Okay.
Were there twins?
Twin magic.
The bumblebees wore masks.
Killer bees.
The bumblebee men wore masks. Bumblebee is John Cena. The killer bees are Bee Brian Blair.
Killer bee movie.
But yeah, so they have this weird thing where like one of the bees... are getting rolled up or something, or on the ropes, and then the other bee puts on a mask on the outside. They're not wearing masks all match.
No.
And then one of them puts on a mask and then jumps and sunset flip rolls up the guy and then wins the match. And then the other one goes outside and puts on a mask as well. Like, it was stupid.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Am I alone on this? I was watching this.
No, it was really dumb.
No, it wasn't even, like, trying to be tricksy and, like, oh, the ref, like, he just missed it. He couldn't have known. It was like, no, like, he just, like, basically waltzed back into the ring.
Yeah. Also, that's a heel move.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
also, even with masks on, they're physically, like... two very different looking, like, one of those dudes was way
fucking
bigger than
way
the other
jacked
dude. It's like,
really, I like Jesse Ventura was saying something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, he was like, oh, like, it's ridiculous that the ref doesn't know. And I was like, yo, they look fucking identical, though.
Which is crazy because, like, Jesse the Body Ventura was talking about how much he loves cheating for the entire 3 hours of this pay-per-view. You think he would have shown a little bit more respect.
That, you know, they're inventing color commentating. They're inventing Survivor Series format. Just got to cut them some slack.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, like, all of those eliminations, like, the order in which it happens really felt like they just had fucking, like, a dartboard or a wheel of some sort.
This was
a
mess. I mean, this was a complete mess.
Yeah.
What are you going to expect with 20 people in a fucking match? Okay?
Yeah.
2 3/4 bald heads.
That is, I think, generous.
That is generous.
That is incredibly generous.
Because there was some high spots in the match for me.
Sure.
That, you know, whatever, 20 people, whatever, took some points off. This was fine.
Okay.
Now we're getting to something I really want to talk about.
Oh, this is just the best.
This is something I really want to talk about. It's Thanksgiving.
It is Thanksgiving.
And how do you celebrate Thanksgiving?
We go up to my cottage and...
Nobody gives a shit. The Million Dollar Man celebrates Thanksgiving in such a way. He reflects on the year and the things he's thankful for. What is he thankful for?
I feel just like that kid with the basketball right now.
He shows highlights. Shows highlights of opportunities he's given of the less fortunate.
It's so good.
He says, I tried to give money to a kid doing push-ups. And then they flash back. One. If you do 10 push-ups, he says.
Yeah.
I'll give you $300. The kid starts doing push-ups. He gets to 9. Ah, oh, you didn't make it. Well, you know what they say. If you can't do the job, you don't get paid.
He has, like, the best evil laugh.
He does.
Right?
The best.
And I love him. Like, he always does the thing where, like, the kid doesn't make it, and he turns and looks at Virgil as if to say, like, should we give it to him anyway? And it's always, like, Virgil's kind of the bad guy who like, silently shakes his head. It's such a nice touch.
Yeah.
You know? I noticed that, too. I was, and for, like, the first bunch of those flashbacky promos, Virgil doesn't say anything. Mm-hmm. He's just there as, like, a silent figure just going, like, no.
Yeah.
Like, shaking his head. Yeah, I thought it was really cool. And then at one point, he just starts, like, screaming at somebody. But,
Yeah, they show the basketball kid where it's like
the
you can
basketball
bounce.
That's the best one.
Is the best where he says like
you can dribble it 15 times.
Ten.
Yeah.
No,
and then he goes and then
no,
he goes
it's important. 15.
It is 15.
I think it's 10.
It's 15, Josh.
Yeah, I'll pull up the old Google machine here. But how many times? Oh, it's 10.
The best part about the basketball one though is where he's like, it's bad enough that he's doing this to, like, children in the first place.
Yeah.
But he says, like, I'm gonna give you $500, and you look to me like you could use a lot more than $500. Oh. It's so rough. And that little kid just, like, doesn't know what to do.
When he kicks the ball out of his hands, that kid is, like, that's broken him. Like, he just doesn't know if he should throw a fit. He doesn't know if he should point out that that wasn't fair. He knows that the crowd's really upset, but he doesn't know, like, if they're upset at him or if they're upset at this fucking horrible man.
Yep.
And, like, the whole thing is just awful, and then they just get him off the stage, and he immediately, like, goes into his mom's an armpit, and it's just like, oh, I wanted to hug that kid so bad.
It's trivia time, you guys.
Oh.
There was two...
That child grew up.
Two cameos in all of the Million Dollar Man segments.
Are you in it?
No.
Is your mom in it?
Okay, you know what? Leave my mom out of this. I don't know where you even got that from. Two cameos. One, a future WWE star. And two... future person in government.
Are they both the same person? Is it Kane?
No. It's gotta be Kane. It's gotta be Kane.
That's a great guess. Does Jesse the Body Ventura count as a person to be in government?
One!
Well, no, hang on. Let me guess future WWE star.
Kevin Owens.
Zach Gowen.
Oh, wow.
Who the fuck is that?
Wow. He's a one-legged guy who got beat up by Bork Laser.
Yeah.
One was Linda McMahon barking like a dog.
Oh, yeah. That was weird, eh?
Barking like a dog.
That was Linda McMahon doing Linda the barking?
Linda McMahon.
I didn't even recognize her.
Number two was Rob Van Dam.
No way.
Kissing the Million Dollar Man's feet.
Ah.
Wait, so what? Did they, like, recruit people, like, to be in these segments that were already in the biz? Or
Linda,
like...
Linda was, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rob Van Dam was just a random kid at ringside.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's wild.
And Vince said, I see something in you, kid.
Yeah. You kiss
see
them.
You down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see a whole lot of anything in you, but I see something in you.
See a lot of fucking butt in you in the future, am I right? Yeah.
Ooh.
Sick tokes.
Yeah. A lot of DDPY.
Does he do DDPY?
Everybody does DDPY, okay, man. And then we have like a whole bunch of like vamping where they're just talking about like fucking anything and everything on commentary to like stretch this pape out to 3 hours.
Honest to God, this was like the biggest time kill. They just kept on talking about Thanksgiving,
yeah,
and how much Honky Tonk Man did to like preserve his title. Mm-hmm. And
we have like a little Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy the Heart promo here.
Please stop. Please, you have to stop this.
It's like, I don't know if anyone's picked it up, but every time we talk about AEW and I reference Tony Schiavone, I always say his name a different way to try and fuck with you.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Yeah, you're terrible.
Josh is aware.
Tony Schiavone.
You're all bad to me.
This is a great heel promo from the Honky Tonk Man, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love how much they call him Honky.
Yeah.
It's really funny. But I feel like this does a really good job, like, maintaining sort of, like, the internal logic of this being a wrestling promotion.
Yep.
Where he's trying to simultaneously distance himself from whoever would be the theoretical, like, next in line to challenge him, being, like, Macho Man. Mm-hmm. And also trying to set himself up to take on Hulk Hogan for the, like, next title up.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like it does a very good job of giving me an idea of like who is this guy, why is he such a piece of shit, and like what does he want, right?
Definitely.
Like, because I think sometimes it's not enough to just be like, I have the title and I want to keep the title. Someone like a Tommaso Ciampa can make that work, but I think especially if you have like a mid-card title, it's great to see you working for the higher up title.
Yeah, it's almost like if you have the secondary title, you should be the next in line.
For the first,
you know? Or the number two guy in the company.
No,
that doesn't work. That would never work in this day and age. On YouTube.
On YouTube.
Alright, then it's Heenan's team.
Say it into the mic, though.
Okay, Bobby the Brain Heenan?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
His team comes out. He's supporting, managing yet another team.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is his last walkout.
Yeah.
It's been six or seven times he's come out this evening.
He's got his 10,000 steps.
Yeah.
Yeah. So his team is Ravishing Rick Rude,
mm-hmm,
King Kong Bundy.
Yep.
And that's all I got.
The Natural Butch Reed.
Oh, yeah. And One Man Gang.
And
Captain Andre the Giant. Le Géant.
Le Géant.
And
on the other team, Campbell, take it away.
We got Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff, Bam Bam.
Orndorff?
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Okay. Bam Bam Bigelow. The Rock. Ken Patera.
It was so really confusing that they kept calling him The Rock.
I know, the whole match they're calling The Rock.
I was confused.
I was like, he's going for it. The People's Elbow.
It's Don Morocco. Don The Rock Johnson Morocco. Ken Patera and Hulk Hogan. Hulk the racist Hogan.
Hulk the Hogan.
Hulk the... What was up with Rick Rude's pants?
So Rick Rude had the best pants in the fucking history of wrestling.
They were just like a bunch of streetlights and stop signs.
Yeah, well, it didn't always make sense. Sometimes he would... So one time he was feuding...
He like put people's wife's faces on his butt, right?
Yeah, on his crotch.
Oh.
And then, like, he used to, like, airbrush, like, the Intercontinental title on there, and then his own face on his tights.
A real Dolph Ziggler type, huh?
Oh, he's way better, though. This is for all you fat, out of shape, no good sweat hogs.
That's cool. Great.
Yeah, he was pretty cool.
Also, the other entrance gear thing that I kind of wanted to bring attention to, as I always do, is what's up with the one-man gang having legit Nazi Totenkopfs on his shoulders?
Well, you know, it was supposed to be Skull and Crossbones.
But, like, you couldn't have just gone with, like, the pirate Skull and Crossbones? You had to go with, like, the Nazi Skull and Crossbones?
I gotta sell that merch, bro.
It's especially weird considering that he became Akeem the African Dream later. <Yeah. laughs> Like, talk about a guy really playing both sides here.
Got a lot to make for.
Hey, but I wanted to talk about Hulk Hogan coming out wearing his little tassel fringe headband.
That was so fucking funny. Holy shit.
And it's all up in his eyes?
Yeah.
Like, he has hair up in his eyes?
Mm-hmm.
But it's...
Hulk, like, it's hard to explain watching Hulk Hogan as, like, a kid. Because, like, he was such a wild man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, his promos didn't make sense. Like, he'd always be talking about his arms.
Oh, my God. This promo. I feel like we had, like, two Andre the Giant promos. Yeah. That were, like, we had a promo for, like, everybody else. We didn't see Hulk Hogan, like, at all until right before this match. And then yeah. He starts going fucking on and on about the food chain. He's like, oh, well, brother, when you know, in the food chain, dude, let me tell you.
He kept on headbutting Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yeah.
And then, like, he was talking about the fire. He's like, I'm going to burn this place down with Bam Bam. Like,
real Seth Rollins vibes there. It didn't make any goddamn sense.
But those were the best promos because, like, he would just be rambling on. But what he was saying was, like, really powerful words. It was the same with the Ultimate Warrior. He's like,
yeah.
I'm going to take this plane and I'm going to crash it nose first into parts unknown. Like, it was like... Like, all that shit got me jazzed up as a kid.
Also, side note, I just realized that they didn't give either of the women's teams any promo time, and, like, that maybe would have helped that match a little bit.
Well.
But, anyway, yeah, so, sorry. We were talking about Hulk Hogan's tasseled headband, I believe.
No, we can move on to Bam Bam Bigelow's, like, cool flame suit.
Bam Bam Bigelow is the fucking coolest. I love his fucking head tattoo, his jumpsuits, everything... I've seen Bam Bam Bigelow wrestle, like, three matches, and he is my shit right now.
Yeah. Like, him in ECW, him in old school W. And, like, look how agile he was. In this match, he was rolling around.
Yeah.
He was, like, you know, flipping and, like, doing moonsaults. He did moonsaults.
He was so agile. Mm-hmm. He, like, he was doing the thing where he wasn't running, he was flipping in order to get away or evade.
From Andre. Yeah.
From Andre, which was so cool.
He was the man, and, he reminds me a lot of, like a Kevin Owens type.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
But, like,
because he's big and round, but bigger. Agile.
Big and round and agile.
Yeah.
New Bam Bam is what I'm going
to
call it.
It's really weird to see Bam Bam wrestle, because I feel like I think of Bam Bam Bigelow as, like, I've only seen him in the context of, like, 90s ECW.
Yeah.
That it's, like, really weird to see him wrestling with, like, fucking Hogan.
You know what we should watch?
Mm.
His match against Lawrence Taylor.
I don't know who Lawrence Taylor is.
Sounds a football like a player.
Oh, he's
a
main event. Sounds like a figure skater.
It was the main event of WrestleMania 14?
13, 14? Okay.
Anyway.
Sure. Get... Why not?
What year? Like, what time? Era?
I guess it would be just before the Attitude Era.
Mm.
Okay.
Anyway, Lawrence Taylor was...
as much as, like, fucking, like, it's 2019 and we're woke and we all hate Hulk Hogan, that first leg drop was fucking cool.
Hogan's a man. Like, back in this day, like, there's nobody better than Hogan.
Like, I don't want to see Hulk Hogan at all anymore.
No, never.
I don't want to see him at fucking Saudi Arabia. I don't want to see him on SmackDown.
He's done.
I'm fucking done with Hulk Hogan. But when he hits that fucking first leg drop and they do the 1-2-3 for that first elimination, it is fucking sick.
And
the crowd goes nuts.
Hogan's wiling out all match. And then, like, so after he hits the first leg drop,
mm-hmm.
he's celebrating with this team and he high fives Ken Patera. Like, and the referee's like, that's a tag. And then then Andre comes in, and then Hogan like turns around and like he's startled,
yeah.
And he like puts up the fist, and the ref's like, "No, you got to get out.
Yeah.
You just tagged Ken Patera."
So dumb.
I was really impressed by Ken Patera, actually. Yeah. I liked him a lot. Like, sort of like Tasmanian Devil energy, kind of running around with the arm brace on. Like,
it's crazy enough to throw a brick through a McDonald's window.
Oh, shit. Did he do that?
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Lauren, did you like anybody in this match?
I thought One Man Gang was really big and scary. I don't know who this is. This note is referring to. I said crazy Olympian does extremely high jump.
Ken Patera.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry. I don't. I legit have like never heard of this person.
That's yeah, totally fair. Yeah.
I really liked the very brief matchup between Bam Bam Bigelow and One Man Gang.
Mm-hmm. Because
they're just both two big beefy boys.
That was kind of thing where it's like I wish commentary had kind of like set that up a little bit more, because sure. I feel like they were the two like really big. I mean, aside from obviously Andre on One Man Gang's team, but they seem like sort of a match made in heaven there. And even Bam Bam King Kong Bundy had some really fun stuff too.
Well, yeah, like they set up the last part of the match pretty well, where Hogan goes to the outside and he like gets counted out mm-hmm. due to shenanigans. And then it's Bam Bam against these three guys. And then, like, I don't know, like, I think Bam Bam held himself pretty well.
Hell yeah, he eliminates two people, I think, after that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, good matchups.
Yeah. Yeah, Bam Bam goes it alone and eliminates everyone but Andre, and then Andre the Giant just, like, falls on him.
He gives him a weird suplex.
Yeah and pins him. And it also
feels so bad for Andre, man. I know.
Yeah, that's one of the notes I have is, like, it's... He can't even fall. Like, he can't...
Yeah.
He can't fall because it hurts him so much. Like, he has to really carefully clamber and, like, ease himself out of a standing position. It's really, yeah. really rough to
Especially
see.
Especially watching all the specials on Andre.
Yeah.
And then, like, going back and watching his matches. It's yeah, like you said, it's, like, just super sad to see because he can't fall down properly, like even like with a big hit
mm-hmm.
yeah.
he's got to like go against the rope and like slowly take a knee, right? Well,
and yeah. that's the thing, is like he's like, even when he's in control of this match, like any for the like brief times, and this was like, I feel like this stipulation, this match stipulation, came out of them being like, all right, we want to set up like Andre and Hogan and keep this feud going,
yeah.
but like we need to protect Andre, and it can't just be another match with like a big bear hug in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, we're going to have Andre assemble like a team of goons to help him out, right? Yeah. But even for the brief times when Andre's in the ring and he's like in control, he's still using the ropes to keep himself up, right?
Totally.
And then he wins the match through this like super weird kind of like halfway between like a double underhook DDT and a suplex.
Yeah.
But basically he just falls over and Bam Bam lies still for him.
Yeah.
And then he, like, super slowly gets up, and they make him, like, go and celebrate and, like, cut a promo, and be like, Hogan, I'm coming for you. And it's like, this dude just wants to go fucking lie down. Just
he wants to crush about 48 beers.
Come on!
Take a shit in somebody's bed. Just go to bed.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I felt so bad for him.
Yeah.
How many bald heads does this main event get?
I give it 3.
Yeah.
And I was... It was fine.
There were moments. I actually liked this more than I thought I was going to.
But it was like one of those things. It's like they really didn't know how to pace matches back in the day. And like a lot of rest holds, a lot of like, but like the good moments were good and mm-hmm. like the slow moments were slow. And
yeah.
I really felt everything in this match, but it was just kind of like mid of the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am very glad that we are down to like one or maybe two Survivor Series matches per Survivor Series nowadays, and
yeah.
we have like a proper undercard with matches that are good with stipulations that make sense.
Wouldn't mind seeing it in like an NXT versus like a main roster Survivor Series.
Yeah, do like a little invasion kind of thing.
Sure.
Could be really fun.
Yeah.
You know? Who would you put on your NXT Survivor Series team?
Well, you gotta have Ciampa.
Yeah.
You gotta have Gargano.
Mm-hmm. Cole.
Yeah, Adam Cole, baby. I'd put Matt Riddle.
Okay.
And probably Keith Lee is
Keith
the big
Lee.
Guy.
Okay. I feel like I could make an argument for Velveteen being in there.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I could make an argument for Killian Dane to be in there. See, I think the thing is that like you could probably structure this and do like qualifying matches.
That'd be right. A good idea.
Like, I think it's a thing.
I think it'd have to be like more of a surprise.
How do you do a surprise Survivor Series match?
You say surprise, right? I know you have him show up on Raw, right?
Yeah.
And you have him show up on SmackDown.
Yeah.
You know, and then you say, well, maybe you can have like a three-way Survivor Series match or something like that.
With two rings and a cage and ladders.
Okay, well, hold on. Then you get the 205s.
But yeah, I think, I don't know, if you're a champion, you automatically qualify for the Survivor Series team, and then the other three spots you have like qualifying matches for, I think could be really fun.
Like a Royal Rumble.
Yeah. Anyway, we usually like to finish things off here with our high spots and our botched spots. So a little honorable mention to something that we really liked and something that we didn't really like so much.
Yeah. High spot was jumping bomb angels, I think, for me. I didn't expect that quality of wrestling on this card. And, man, they nailed it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait. I'm going to tie that with the entire Million Dollar Man segment.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's was awesome.
Sorry to take two, but...
No, that's all right.
And the botch spot, I don't know, like rest holds. Man, this whole fucking thing was so long. Like, it was 3 hours, and there's five matches, right?
Four
matches!
Yeah.
Four fucking matches, and each match was like, you know, half an hour to 45 minutes. That's way too long.
With all of these fucking garbage promos.
Give me a fucking break. Anyway, so that for me, that's a botch spot. I'm glad they tightened that up a little bit, but...
Yep. My high spot was Jake the Snake's mullet, and my low spot was Brutus Beefcake's mullet.
That's solid. That's pretty solid.
That is the proper allocation also. Yeah.
With Greg the Hammer Valentine right in the middle. Lauren, do you have one now?
Yeah. I decided that my high spot was just Hercules dressed up as he do in the black trunks with the chain.
Mm-hmm.
He looks great.
He does look
really
great.
Good. And that's my high spot. My botch spot is going to be... my botch spot, yeah, I guess I'm just going to be the outfit person exclusively today, but my botch spot is going to be Brutus the Barber Beefcake's weird panel leggings that, like, you can see half his ass.
What?
But no thong.
That was a great look.
They're also in, like, violently bright green with leopard or tiger print.
Look, Brutus the Barber Beefcake walked in 1987 so that Trish Stratus could run in 2019.
Standing okay? On the shoulders of giants.
What does Trish Stratus have to do with this?
She also wears like mesh cutaways now because she like had a kid and decided to come back to wrestling, which is like great. Fucking give her, you know? A good Canadian kid. Anyway, this has been our thoughts on Survivor Series 1987. We hope that Survivor Series 2019 is a fucking heck of a lot better.
Yeah. Join us next week for Survivor Series 1988. We're doing Survivor Series month here.
It's all Survivor Series from here on out. We've peaked. If you have any suggestions for other stuff for us to watch, you can hit us up at facebook.com/stonecoldshots.
Yeah, it's going to be twitter.com/stonecoldshots.
Follow us, like subscribe to us, and leave a review for us on any iTunes or podcasting products that you may have.
5-star versus
it's okay.
Sure, man.
It's five bald heads.
Five
dude.
Bald heads.
Oh,
just stick with five bald heads.
Yeah, you don't have to.
Five
bald heads.
Yeah, we'll catch you next time.
Bye.